I have indeed hit the record button.
Good on you. Hello, I'm Simon Mercer. This is Crave, the podcast dedicated to film, music, television, theatre, anything else that's been entertaining Steve McCabe and me lately. Welcome to our 37th episode.
37th.
I'm not really sure if there's anything special about 37, the number that is, Steve.
Oh, you can't beat a good prime number, can you?
No, and I'm sure good things happened to us both when we were 37 years of age.
Yes, I have a feeling they did.
But it's such a long time ago for me.
So sad. I'm not even getting drawn on that conversation.
No, let's move on.
I think we should move on to the recent week's entertainment. Now music has kept our guest reviewers rather busy.
Indeed.
Rather than us, hasn't it? Yeah. So it's a special thanks to Sue Wells and Frankie Mahoney, who stepped up to the challenge of covering Adele for us. That was very good of you, ladies. Thank you very much for that.
Yes.
Because we've been kept busy with a veritable tsunami of movies.
Well, it's true. It's absolutely true.
Well, and it feels appropriate to have a Japanese reference at some point.
I think so, given that's one of the movies we're going to cover. That's absolutely right. Yes, Steve and I, we've been positively soaked to the skin by the tsunami. We have emerged unscathed, though. We're standing on our respective sandy beaches, me in central Auckland and him a bit further south. We've got our. Am I milking this metaphor enough, Steve?
You are. I think there's one last bit of the metaphor that works, is all good waves have peaks and troughs.
How can they not?
Absolutely. And I think that's fairly representative of the films we've seen in the last fortnight, isn't it?
It is. I mean, and of course, we've got school holidays and Easter holidays coming up pretty soon, and already there are some films out there, or just arrived, for younger audiences, calling to young imaginations and to the wallets of their parents.
Yes. So this very morning, in fact, I imagine the credits are probably still rolling as we speak. We went along to see the Lego Batman movie. Now you saw the Lego movie, didn't you?
I actually didn't.
Oh, you didn't.
I don't think I did. No, I did see. You know, this is interesting. I did see Team America.
Ooh.
Which is actually quite an adult film, isn't it?
Very graphic.
It was, and it's hugely satirical, politically satirical. So I had to actually check myself, because I remember seeing that it was replayed on TV not that long ago, and it was lingering in the back of my mind, and I just had to say to myself, okay, these films, they are meant to be for kids and adults, but that was one just for adults. And so just get that out of your mind, Simon, just focus on a much more kid-friendly film.
Oh, very definitely. Yeah, this was...
Yeah.
This was very much a kid's film. And in the same way, the new version, the new reimagining of Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, with real actors. Well, apart from the Beast, of course, but real actors, real humans.
Yes.
Absolutely. So we both caught both of those films. We've both got some, I think we're mostly in agreement, but maybe not completely. Now, something else, Steve. I was, not as young as the young ones going along to see Batman this morning, but I was youngish, in my teens, I guess, when an American TV show called Chips was quite popular over here in New Zealand. I don't know how popular it was in the UK, but do you remember the John and Poncherello and their beige suits?
and their unfeasibly big bikes.
Yes. So Steve, I'm relying on you to advise me whether I should spend some money to see the latest version on the big screen, okay? Okay.
We'll keep you in suspense on that one.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Now what I'm going to rely on you upon is to let me know. I didn't get a chance to see Ghost in the Machine. Sorry, I beg your pardon. Ghost in the Shell. I do apologise. Ghost in the Machine was an album by the Police, wasn't it? Ghost in the Shell is the new supposedly Japanese, but we're not quite sure, adaptation of a Japanese superhero film with that well-known Japanese actress Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know she was Japanese before this film. And that's really the big talking point of the film. How do you translate, another culture into the English language, and how far do you go? And I'll be fascinated. I'll tell you about what I thought, Steve. I'll be interested to know what you having lived in Japan yourself.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to know what you make of it. But look, should we start with the film that's the most fresh in our minds? And this is the Lego Batman movie. Steve, I'm not really sure whether we necessarily need to get into the plot per se.
Well, there was a plot.
The theme or whatever. Not the anyway. Basically, at the beginning of the film, we've got Batman. Everyone loves him, but he is a guy who doesn't really. He's not a friendship guy. He's not into forming attachments with people. But in the course of confronting just about every single villain and hero in the DC universe, in the course of this film, he does come to reconsider his worldview. Is that enough of a plot outline? It probably is even more than you need.
It is, because let's face it, this film is not about the plot, is it?
No, it's not. No.
No. It's got Will Arnett, who came to fame in Arrested Development, basically playing the same character he plays in everything he ever does. He even mentions the fact that he speaks always with the same gravelly voice all the way through it. Playing Batman, as imagined, as a Lego figure.
Mm-hmm.
And what else can you say? It is utterly barking mad.
It's barking mad. It's quick. There's a lot of sharp visual and script references to Batman's history and other iterations of Batman on the small screen and the big screen. We've mentioned other characters in the DC universe. There's a bit of a dig at the Marvel universe in there, and there's a lot of rapid fire visual action and script lines coming at you from all directions. It's actually, I was actually getting a bit tired trying to absorb it all, Steve. There's a lot going on.
Well, for the first about 20 minutes or so, it is absolutely overwhelming.
Yeah, it's funny. I was laughing out loud. I think you were too.
It was hysterically funny. It's one of those very, very rare things. It's a film that can amuse children and also have some very adult humour in it as well, without simply just doing fart gags for the children and then sex gags for the parents. It actually manages, as far as I could tell, to be funny across the board. But it just didn't let up, did it? It was unremitting.
It was, and actually, I think we both enjoyed it. I did enjoy it, but I have to say I was slightly surprised when I went back to check the duration of this film later, and it was 1 hour 44 minutes, so that's a decent length. But I actually felt, because of the bombardment you've just been talking about, Steve, I almost felt like I needed to have a pause for breath, and it was almost for me just a bit long. It would have perhaps even been more impactful if it had been a bit shorter, just because I got a bit weary of dealing with all the having to be at attention, all the time to capture every gag and every that was coming my way.
It was exhausting, wasn't it? I mean, there's no.
That's the word, exhausting. It was, yes. Yeah. But there were some good gags.
There were some fantastic gags. I mean, I did notice you were making a few notes in your notebook. I was terrified to look away from the screen.
Well, I perfected the art of writing without looking.
Clearly, yeah, because I was concerned of looking away and missing things.
The trouble with my art of writing without looking is I can't read what I've written afterwards.
Ah.
Thereby negating the art of writing without looking.
Does somewhat, yeah, so it's actually writing without looking. It's scribbling without looking, really, isn't it, to be fair?
Yes. But, there was the way they used, not just, there were Doctor Who references and other Lord of the Rings references, all sorts of other characters from other pieces of fiction thrown into the plot, which kept it, you just wondered what was going to happen next. That was very clever. There was very quick humor. Some nice use of songs. I quite like the use of, doesn't matter if we mention the names of songs, does it? I don't think it does. One is the loneliest number.
I thought it was beautiful,
nice.
Yes.
That was nice. And I could tell just from the reactions around us, Steve, there were some young children there, like 3, 4, 5, 6, I'm guessing. There were a lot of the kids were enjoying it. There's no doubt about it, because there's a lot of action, a lot of fighting and explosions, Lego explosions and whatnot.
Yes, but it is sufficiently cartoon violence and cartoon humour that you get away with murder. In fact, I think they possibly did several times.
Yeah. Yes.
In fact, one concern I had. Here's a story from Japan that you might not be familiar with, but back in 1997, about 20 years ago, TV Tokyo got into a lot of trouble when they were broadcasting an episode of Pokemon on it was about 6 in the afternoon, and it was obviously meant for children, and about 600 children were reporting convulsions, vomiting, irritated eyes, and the suspicion was that just because of the amount of vigorous flashing and very, very aggressive graphics, the concern that there was, they were talking about something called television epilepsy. And
goodness me.
And this was at the back of my mind as we were watching this film, thinking, I was thinking it's going to set me off. I was surprised that we didn't hear more cries, but the screening we were at was full of children. I think that we were the only adult males in the cinema, possibly.
There weren't many. There might have been one or two. No, there weren't many. One or two dads, but not many.
Yeah.
No, you're right. Yeah. No, that's a fair point. I mean, I guess this film was available in 3D as well, which would add to the...
God, that would just make your head explode, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I know. Yes, and actually, the choreography of it, I suppose, if that's the right word, was pretty impressive. And what they've packed into every scene was also impressive. And you could, really hard to, in very short, quick editing, to pick up everything that was going on. And yes, you might end up with a bit of a headache.
I just knew there was stuff I was missing. There was so much. I mean, is it worth mentioning the voice cast?
Let's do that. There's some really well-known names one or two are very well distinct names that I guess people will pick up on, but I don't know. I've heard of this, for example, the Riddler is played by an American late night talk show host called Conan O'Brien, who I'm familiar with him. I didn't pick up that was him.
No, of course not.
No. Billy Dee Williams is a very well-known actor. He was Two-Face. I didn't know that was Billy Dee Williams.
And should we mention who played Voldemort?
Yes,
Voldemort's in the film.
Yes, and it was played by a fellow Brit of yours.
Yes, Eddie Izzard.
Yeah.
And there was a fellow Kiwi of yours.
Yes, Mr. Clement, Jermaine Clement was Sauron.
I mean, I'm not sure which is more remarkable, the fact that it was Jermaine Clement or the fact that Sauron was in the damn film.
Yeah. And both Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill were in it. Mariah Carey. I mean, yeah, so there's a lot of names.
Elizondo. Who else?
Yeah.
It's absurd.
And you would really be struggling to pick out all these names. I mean, the voices, I think. One who's got a distinctive voice who I did pick out was Rosario Dawson as she plays Barbara. Is it Barbara? Yes, Barbara.
Barbara Gordon.
Gordon, or Catwoman, or Catgirl, or whatever she is.
Batgirl.
Batgirl, beg your pardon. Oops.
Catwoman was Zoe Kravitz.
Yes, I've got that wrong. Yeah, Batgirl was Rosario Dawson, correct. I'll get it right eventually. And Ralph Fiennes, who actually was Voldemort in the real Harry Potter films.
Yes, of course he was.
Was also
of
in
course.
This film.
Yes.
I mean, it's very confusing.
It was. I mean, Channing Tatum as Superman. I mean, this is the ultimate crossover film.
It's crisscrossed, is what it is. So look, it's a lot of fun. It's fast moving. It's obviously we can attest to the fact that young ones will enjoy it.
Yes.
There's a lot of stuff there for slightly older people as well. It's exhausting. But I would say something, Steve. I mean, I would take a little bit of an issue with you about, because I think that on one point, I think a lot of this type of film. Putting to one side the Team America one I mentioned earlier, but a lot of these sorts of films are quite cleverly pitched at both adults and kids. I think they have been for a little while now. And I used to, back in the day, Toy Story and all those sorts of ones, back in the day I would make an effort to see them. There's so many of them now, and they're very well made, but I generally don't feel I need to rush out and see every time one of them comes along, because they come along so often. And I think that this is a very good entry in that canon of film. I'm not sure it's going to be in time, once we let a bit of time subside, whether it'll remain as an absolute classic for me, but it was enjoyable while I watched it. There's no doubt about that.
No, I'd give you that one. I mean, the Lego movie that came out a couple of years ago, if you've not seen it, definitely see it. It's got, rather than sort of the relentless, endless in-your-face sledgehammer humour of the Lego Batman movie, there's actually a very sweet point to be made in the Lego film. It's very funny. It's got the same sort of visual aesthetic, but it's not as beat you over the head with it. And the ending is, well, I won't even attempt to describe the ending. It's just beautiful. So go.
Okay.
I would suggest, by all means, buy a ticket for the Lego Batman movie, but then as soon as you've done that, what's our modern day equivalent of going to the video store?
That's a good point. Well, maybe it'll turn up on Netflix or one of those sorts of places, or
wherever one gets one's digital media from, turn to your source of choice and get hold of the Lego Movie, because it's even better.
Okay, well, that and Steve, we were confronted with yet another Lego Movie in the works, soon to be released. We saw the trailer of it, so they I think they're onto a good thing. Yes, it was kind of a
the Lego Ninjago Movie.
Ninjago, which had sort of Transformers in it, it looked like. Anyway,
it's got everything in it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so look, we enjoyed it, and we think you probably will too. But that's not the only movie that's ostensibly aimed at young folks that we've both caught up with in recent times. Another one just opened just last week was a live action, if that's the right phrase to use, version of a Disney animated story, a very well-known and loved film at the time. We're talking about the early 90s when the original animated story came out. That's Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, 1991, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the story itself probably goes back, goodness knows, probably centuries or something. But taking my daughter to see that and watching it at home on a video. Probably it was a video cassette, I suspect, Steve, way back then.
Yes.
So I was very familiar with the Disney story. I couldn't persuade my daughter to come see it. She's moved on. She's grown up.
Now that more than anything else is what's going to make you feel old.
It is. I know. Anyway, just give us your initial thoughts anyway, and I'll chime in with my two cents.
We shan't even bother attempting to do a story recap.
No, because it's so well known.
In fact, we're not even going to fuss about spoilers.
No, I don't, we need to. No,
because
no.
Quite frankly, if you don't know, then where have you been?
Exactly, where have you been for 25 years? Right. So
what we've got is a live action version of a well loved film. It was such an influential animation back in 91. If I'm not mistaken, it was nominated for the Best Picture Oscar. If I'm not mistaken, it was possibly the first animation to be nominated.
Certainly
one of the very first, anyway.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, it was one of the reasons why they now have a Best Animated Feature.
Okay, so it's a very influential and important film, the first one.
Absolutely.
And so this had a lot to live up to then.
Well, it did, and it failed and it succeeded in pretty much equal parts for me.
Okay. I'll just my one-line summary is I did enjoy it, and mainly because I think it just transported me back to an earlier chapter in my life as a parent, and I sort of just bathed in those nice thoughts. When I stopped to analyze the film a little more logistically and a little more coolly, I still thought they did a great job, but I did have some misgivings. But back to you, Steve, with what you think. Well, why you think in equal measure it worked and it didn't.
Well, I think you just said something really, really telling right there when you said that it took you back. I think a lot of what people are getting from this film is the nostalgia factor. You've got very, very fond memories of a very special time in your life, and you're wanting to be taken back to that, and that's partly what you're seeing when you watch this film. But let's be honest, it's a fairy tale, it's a fairy story, and what Disney have always done best, what Disney were founded on, is animations, and what made them not just a hugely successful studio but into the behemoth that they became is their treatment in animation of fairy stories. That's what Disney do, and it's what Disney do better than anybody else.
Yes.
And it's one of the reasons why the 1991 original was the masterpiece that it was. Now,
yes,
suddenly,
okay,
we've now got a live-action film, which, I mean, it looked gorgeous. It really did. It was a beautiful thing to look at.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very stagey in many places. It's a musical, which, again, an animation lends itself to that. But also in an animation, you're willing to suspend disbelief and you don't analyse things too closely. So you don't dwell on the fact that when the Enchantress condemns the prince to become the beast and to entrap him in in his punishment. She also inflicts exactly the same punishment on all his staff. How monstrously cruel is she?
That's why she's an enchantress. Yes, yes, okay.
But we don't dwell on that. Because
no.
It's a cartoon, it's not an animation, it's not real life. But now we're being given a real life story, and so we have to dwell on the fact that Belle, played reasonably well by Emma Watson, basically slips into Stockholm syndrome at a speed that Melania Trump must be wishing she could. It's not realistic. You have to accept that basically you've got someone who is imprisoned and falling for her captor at a terrifying rate. There's terrifyingly it's hinting toward bestiality, a little bit of rapiness toward the end, when, you know, is she really falling in love with the beast, or is she falling in love with her captor? The whole thing, these are questions that never get raised when you're watching the animation, because the animation has that childish, innocent charm to it. You make it a live action film, even a good live action film like this, and I find that you're then confronted with some very confronting questions.
Okay, well, I don't.
Yeah, you're less of a curmudgeon
than I am.
See it
that way. I don't. I mean, I understand what the point you're trying to make there, but I guess I still saw it as a fairy tale very much. Yes, it is live action, but I just thought, especially because, you know, they get into the songs pretty early on, the song at the very beginning when Belle is in the village and saying good morning, and bonjour, and blah, blah, blah. So pretty early on for me, yeah, I'm right back in that. I remember the song. I'm back in the fairy tale. I largely enjoyed Emma Watson's take on Belle. I thought she, she's kind of got and there's an intelligence about her that you kind of get this. I got the sense that she was, doing a good job with the role, but knowing what she was doing, it wasn't not overselling the role. And some of the other performances I think really helped. And in particular, the role that probably really for me made the film work, in the sense that, you know, it's a fairy tale and you're not to be taken too seriously, is Gaston, played by Luke Evans, and his sidekick Le Fou, who is played by, he says, Josh Gad. And they are the comic for much of the film, although Gaston has his dark side. He's such a pompous ass that it's hard to take him too seriously. And I thought they really brought the film back into sort of a campy, forgive the word, fairy tale, and all the more because in this film, Le Fou, there's a lot talked about this earlier, how he is pretty, well, he's openly a gay character, but it's done in a humorous way. So I wasn't, my mind wasn't going to issues of captive, you know, Stockholm syndrome and the like, Steve. I see where you're making that point, but I didn't quite go there. But I did think the story didn't work so well is they added some extra songs, which I didn't recall, and I think they were new songs. That didn't help at all, in my opinion. They weren't memorable tunes. They didn't really, felt a bit like padding. You know, what did you think about the Beast? Because I thought the Beast was a bit of a weak point for me. I didn't think he looked too nice, Steve. He looked too handsome. He didn't look beastie enough to be scary enough, which he has to be scary as well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he just needed a shave, really, didn't he? I'm assuming they did something with his voice in post production. He had a wonderful voice, a
he
magnificent
did.
Voice.
Voice,
but
yes.
they made him a bit too charming, a bit too soon.
Yeah, I think so. And I just think he looked too, this face just looked a bit too human to me. The nose and the mouth, it needed to be a little scarier. I think even in the 91 or whatever it was, animated version, it was a more of a beastie look that they came up with in the animation. So I was slightly disappointed in that, I have to say.
No, I can go with that. But I think we also need to have a quick chat about the supporting cast. We mentioned Emma Watson taking the lead role. And yeah, I mean, she was good, but a little bit lightweight, I felt, to be honest.
Okay, all right. Well, it's good when we don't always agree, I think.
You're right about Luke Evans as Gaston. He was definitely, he was having nearly, but not quite as much fun as Ewan McGregor as Lumiere.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, yeah. And Ewan McGregor was having a wonderful time with his French accent as Lumiere, and there were some other really well-known, very, very well-known and successful actors like Ian McKellen.
As Cogsworth, yes.
Cogsworth. Stanley Tucci, the wonderful American actor, playing the harpsichord, was it the harpsichord he was? Or the...
Yes, Maestro Cadenza.
Yeah, and Emma Thompson's in there.
And let's face it, no film with Emma Thompson in can ever be all bad.
No, I agree. I think she's fantastic, Emma Thompson.
Yeah, and I would never, ever accuse her of phoning it in, ever. But you got the sense that this is the kind of thing, that a role like that, she can do that in her sleep.
Yeah.
This was not a role that taxed her overly, but she's so utterly wonderful that even if she were phoning it in, it's still streets ahead of most actors' A-game, to be fair. I mean, it's the kind of thing that she just does utterly effortlessly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it is a very impressive cast, and
it is.
It does look really good. What did you think of the new songs? They didn't do anything for me, I have to say.
No, I would suggest. I mean, you. It's a while since I've seen the original film, so other than, you know, the classics like "Be My Guest" or the Gaston song.
Yes.
I wasn't overly familiar with all the songs, but I could tell which were the new ones.
Yeah, the new ones were the ones that weren't that memorable.
Exactly, yeah. There was just something a little bit lacking in them, wasn't there?
Yeah, just as a tune, the melodies weren't particularly catchy. No. I thought the Gaston song was had a great old time with doing that. That's the one in the inn when everyone's proclaiming his macho credentials, and that was a lot of fun.
Of course, that was always going to be a good set piece, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and the other character, the actor we didn't mention, whose face we do see all the way through, is Maurice.
Oh yes, Kevin Kline, the American actor Kevin Kline.
We haven't seen much of him lately, have we?
No, I quite enjoyed his work. It was slightly understated, I thought.
Very much so, yes.
He didn't go over the top with it, and it was quite a nicely finely drawn little observation of Maurice, I thought. Yeah, in contrast to some of the other characters. So I mostly thought it was good. I have some reservations. I wouldn't say it was brilliant, but I think they did a pretty good job. The visualization of it is really good, and as I say, it strikes that nostalgic chord very, very strongly, and that in itself will just catapulted me back and helped me enjoy the film.
It's making absurd amounts of money.
Oh, whew. I think it's hundreds and hundreds of millions so far and counting. So,
I heard that last week in the UK, I mean, not only was it number one in the UK box office last week, it had taken significantly more money than numbers 2 to 10 combined.
Ah, well, that's a telling little statistic, isn't it?
It's not doing too shabbily.
No. Well, I think that whole thing of people just. You know, the parents will remember something that they would like to go back to, and maybe if the kids are old enough, they'd like to see what. There's a strong curiosity factor in a film like this, I think, that draws you a number of people to it, and I think it seems to have worked for them. So
yeah,
yep.
Well, I'm just having a quick look at some statistics here. The estimated budget was in the order of $160 million.
Yeah.
US dollars. It's opening weekend. Opening weekend, it took $174 million in the US alone.
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
That's not shabby, is it, now?
No, that's really... they'll be very happy. So it's getting close to $800 million around the world, so that's a lot of money.
So frankly, regardless of how impressed you and I might have been, nobody else seems to care, especially.
No.
It's selling like nobody's business.
It is. Yeah. Okay, so, so Steve and I have a few reservations here and there. Perhaps I've enjoyed it a little more than he, but I'd if you have any memories of the first, I'd recommend you see this one. That would be my thought.
I'd like a lot, yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So moving onwards, moving on to I don't know. It's hard to imagine a film further removed from the first two. But do you remember back in the 70s? I think it was 77. A television program called Chips.
I do remember it because it was quite popular here in New Zealand then, Steve. And I think I remember enjoying it. I don't necessarily remember it as being a, you know, a high quality drama or anything, but I think most New Zealanders of my age would remember the two lead characters, John and Ponch. And they just were kind of likable kind of guys, and they bounced off each other and comedically, and yeah, it was just a bit of fun and nothing too demanding. That's my memory of it. But now I have not seen this new cinematic take on that TV series. You have.
And yet you've just basically reviewed it.
Oh, have
I think
I?
your exact words were a bit of fun, but not much to it. And there you go.
Yes.
That's my review basically of the film.
Oh, okay.
Seriously, that's it. It is. I don't, it's been getting some dreadful reviews.
Has it?
It
Oh, what a
has been
shame.
getting absolutely slammed, and I was ready to hate it.
Ah, okay.
And the setup is utter bollocks.
Ah, doesn't help.
John, played by Dax Shepherd, who is not the world's most engaging screen presence at all.
Ah, okay.
He basically kind of he looks like a permanently surprised elongated glove puppet. He's an odd looking bloke, but since he's a director and the writer, he can do what he damn well wants. And so
I
he
suppose he can.
cast himself as John, who in this particular iteration of Chips is a fading motorcycle stunt rider who, in order to try and win his wife back, tries to sign up for the California Highway Patrol. As you do.
Of course, if you do, yeah, of course,
I mean,
yes.
you can see, you can just see where this is going, can't you? Ponch is a well, that's not he, that's apparently not the character's real name. He's an undercover FBI agent from Miami who's placed in the CHP so that he can try and figure out who's running a corrupt little operation that's cooperating with armored car holdups.
Blimey. Okay.
Exactly. So
Yeah.
that's your story. And the way that plays out, that would be one of the less successful episodes of the TV series.
Yeah.
The story basically from about 10 minutes in, you know where it's going. It's beyond predictable.
Right.
So the story, you know, it's basically by the numbers. Yeah, you know where it's going. Okay, fair enough. So how are we going to get there? So the spice that they give it to try and make it witty and funny, and you know how like there's been this trend recently with things like Starsky and Hutch and 21 Jump Street
Yeah.
and Baywatch is coming up soon as well. Yeah, there's
Yeah,
this
yep.
ironic remakes it on the cinema screen of our beloved TV shows of for youth, and that's kind of the angle they're trying to take it at.
Yes.
And so, Michael Peña plays Ponch as a homophobic sex addict.
A homophobic sex addict. Okay. Now,
Yes.
okay, because I did see a trailer, and there was quite a bit of in the trailer. There's a few scenes which are all based around each other's crotches and whether one should get too close or not to them. So that seems to fit,
Yes.
so to speak.
But well,
Yes.
absolutely. But the thing is, it feels so bolted on, like somebody realized, look, we've got the story, we've got this whole corruption and hijacking story, but it's not enough. Somebody go and write some gags, and somebody
Yeah.
went off and wrote some gags and said, here's your gags, stick them in, and they don't go anywhere. And there's a lot to be said for really good shock comedy. Done well, it's hysterically funny.
Yes.
But you have to commit to it. You have to actually own it. You have to say, right, that's the film we're making. And they don't do it. They don't. They. There's one great scene where Ponch sees a couple of young women dressed in yoga clothes getting out
Right.
of their car. And he has to look away because apparently yoga pants are like some sort of kryptonite for him. And so he has John describe the one woman's yoga pants, and he can identify which particular style from Lululemon she's wearing just by the description of the gusset. And you're
Okay.
thinking, you know, if you're going to do that, you could actually have a really good, well-developed running gag out of this. But you have to
Yes.
own it, you have to develop it, you have to work with it. They throw it in once and then forget about it completely. And that's not satisfying. Do it
No.
or don't do it, but don't
And
just
I,
tinkle
yeah.
around it.
Yeah, and I'm disappointed for one reason, because I have seen Michael Peña in a few films now, and I'm getting to quite like him. I think he's done some quite good work in some other films, and I've seen him do have a nice comedic touch. He was in the one of the earlier Marvel films called Ant-Man. I don't know if you saw that, Steve.
No,
And
I didn't.
he was very successful in that film, I thought. So yeah, disappointed to hear that.
Yeah,
I'm
he's about the best
yeah.
thing in it, to be fair. He
Is he?
carries the damn film.
Yeah,
Yeah,
well.
and sort of, how can we say, Dax Shepard really does his best to play off him, but Peña does all the heavy lifting, and when it's good, and there are moments, I have to be honest, there are moments when the jokes hit, and it's
Yeah.
largely because Peña makes them work.
Right. Yeah. Well,
So,
I don't feel particularly enthused, I'd have to say.
no, save your money. Seriously, save your money. Baywatch might be better in a few months' time, but no, do not rush out.
You know, I like you. I was thinking about all the attempts there have been, Steve, in recent times to remake small screen productions to the large screen. It's hard to think of many that have really worked. I mean, even since we've been doing Crave, I remember there was The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah.
That was a bit of a flop.
Oh mate, that was Citizen Kane compared to Chips.
Was it? Okay. Well, that helps me a lot. That really puts it in some perspective. Oh,
Oh.
yeah. So I think Get Smart, they had another go at not that long, a few years ago now. I mean, they can't help having a go at these things, but they rarely work, I'd say.
One thought that kept coming to me as I was watching it was, who decided that this was necessary?
Someone who thought there was money in it, but I don't.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That that that
I
that's
don't know.
it.
Beyond that, I don't know.
No, I mean, you know, th 6 months ago, were you sitting there on a Sunday afternoon, staring into your coffee, thinking, you know what, I really wish someone would make. Do you know what would make my cinematic life complete? You weren't having this conversation, were you?
No, no,
No,
no.
you were not thinking. You know, look, it's great. You know, the films like, you know, Moonlight got made, and Hidden Figures, and all these other fantastic films, and all these wonderful. But you know what? Someone really, just to complete the cinematic experience, someone needs to make a film of Chips.
Yeah. No. I would
Now,
the chips I was thinking about were the ones with the salt and the vinegar on them, I think.
Vin,
Back
oh, you
then.
civilized man! You're the first Kiwi I've heard who actually understands that. Thank you.
Hey,
You've just single-handedly restored my faith in New Zealand right there.
right. Woo.
I was ready to give up on this country until then.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm glad to have achieved something this afternoon or today. All right, so I'm going to give the chips a bit of a wide berth. Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Oh, well played. Very good.
Yeah. Yes,
See what you
thank
did
you.
there.
Now, we'll move on, shall we?
I think we ought to after that, yes.
Yes. Now, you lived in Japan, haven't you?
Yeah, oh God, yeah, a long time ago. I was there for about 10 years. Yes.
You must have picked up on a little bit of the popular culture over there from time to time.
A wee bit, a wee bit. A lot of it's very inaccessible if you're not really, really keen.
Okay.
What you're obviously asking me some very leading questions there. Where
Yeah.
are we headed with this?
I wonder where. Yeah. Well, okay. I'll pick up that little baton. It's just opened in the last little while is a English language movie, a version of what I understand, Steve, is a very popular and a very well-respected Japanese sci-fi tale called Ghost in the Shell. Had you
Yeah.
heard of that at all from your
No, I
time?
hadn't actually. In fact, I have to be honest, when I first started seeing the trailers for this over the last several months, I didn't even realize it was a Japanese thing.
Okay. Well, you might recall I mentioned my daughter in Beauty and the Beast a little earlier on. Well, my daughter Nina has, she had a lot of affection for the Japanese style of graphic cartoons, the anime. And she saw this as a film. I think she said it was at least 10, 15. Oh, she was 11 years old when she saw it. That's right. And so she saw it when she was quite young. And she knows the story very well. And it's come out in Japan as a film, an animated film, but also as a graphic like a comic book series. So it's pretty well known over there. And I took her along to see this film because I don't know the background, and I thought it'd be interesting to compare. This is a sci-fi story, Steve, and it's really the theme of it is something which I guess a lot of sci-fi covers, and that is the whole idea of as humanity evolves, what's going to happen with artificial intelligence or the idea of life when we start putting our bodies start becoming mechanical or artificial or cybernetic or whatever, but what's going to happen to our minds? I mean, that's all sorts of sci-fi tales have canvassed that, and this one does as well. So in this film, we've got a big Chinese corporation called the Hanka Corporation. Okay. They've developed these sort of cybernetic creatures, and there's a first, and Scarlett Johansson plays a character called Major Motoko Kusanagi. I hope I'm getting my pronunciation right.
Sounds about right to me. That's a good Japanese-sounding name.
It's a good Japanese-sounding name, and she is, we are told, the first of a new breed. They've kept her brain, her human mind, and they've put it in an entirely artificial body.
I have to be honest, if you're going to put a brain in an artificial body, you could do a lot worse than Scarlett Johansson's, couldn't you?
Well, that is possibly correct, yes. And so the ghost in the shell idea is that the ghost is the ghost of her mind, her soul, and the shell is the cybernetic frame in which it is sitting. So that's kind of how the title works. And there's a bit of the story itself is a little bit of something you might have seen before. She's part of a big crime-fighting unit, and they're chasing some bad guy who seems to be knocking off the scientists who created the Scarlet's character. Along the way, she starts to have a few doubts about whether the memories that she's recalling in her human brain are actually her real memories.
Yeah.
And so through the course of the film, this is really the key theme of it. What is it to be human? How far will she go to try and find out what really happened to her? That type of idea that is developed. The key point to this film, I think, Stephen, this is what I was keen to get from my daughter, was that, you know, how do they try and take a Japanese story and put it into an English language version? And the answer is, it's incredibly muddled. You just pointed out, you know, Scarlett Johansson is playing a character with an entirely Japanese name.
Yeah.
It seems to be set in a Japanese coastal city, although the signs are, I think, in Japanese. But everyone speaks English, although there's one character, a well-known Japanese actor, Beat Takeshi Kitano, who he only speaks in Japanese with subtitles, but when he talks to people, they reply to him in English.
Oh, what is this?
It's all very bizarre. So it's a Jap, and there's costumes which are clearly Japanese costumes. Scarlett Johansson has got a hairstyle that you think is trying to look Japanese, and makeup that's trying to make her look slightly Asian, but she's not Asian. And it's just, you're not quite, I found that distracting, because it felt like, what is the identity here? You're trying to have your foot in both camps there, and I didn't think that it worked particularly well. But the other thing is, I guess, what sort of sci-fi tale are you telling? Are you telling a sort of a serious sci-fi film, exploring some sort of serious idea, which I think, from my daughter tells me, that's what the original Japanese material was?
Yeah.
Or are you just going for a big budget action, fight scenes, special effects, sci-fi blockbuster? And it's, again, trying to do both. And so consequently, I think it didn't really succeed in either super well. It's not a terrible film by any means, but it's not going to stay in my memory that long, because we're so used to seeing good special effects these days, aren't we? We're so good to seeing great fight scenes and all sorts of fantastic effects. That's kind of, there's got to be the story and the characters, and it just didn't quite get there. It's not awful. Scarlett Johansson she's good at playing those action heroines. She's done it in Marvel movies for a long time. There are some good actors like Juliette Binoche in there. But just trying to do too much there. The other thing is, are you familiar with Blade Runner at all?
Oh, obviously, Blade Runner?
Well, you couldn't see this film without thinking they've taken a lot of the visuals from Blade Runner, the cityscape.
Okay.
You remember in Blade Runner, there are these sort of huge advertising billboards on the sides of buildings?
Yeah.
Well, they do that again here, but there's sort of 3D advertisements.
Oh, okay.
Remember those scenes in Blade Runner where there are those street stalls, those food stalls on the streets?
Yeah.
And Harrison Ford's, you know, rushing from the between the rain to try and eat something. That sort of scene is there. It's not filmed in incessant rain, but I felt a lot of Blade Runner imagery was coming back to my mind, and I was a bit disappointed by that.
Well,
that seemed a bit.
They've obviously decided they wanted to make this sort of COD Japanese, and the city in which Blade Runner is set. I mean, it's so very heavily sort of the Shinjuku Shibuya area of Tokyo. Very,
right.
Very distinct. I mean, I could take you to the parts of Tokyo where they drew their inspiration for Blade Runner, and what you've just described is basically the same thing. It sounds like it wants to be more Japanese than it's willing to be.
I think that would be I think that's a good summary. There were a few moments here and there where they did try and get a little more serious with this idea of changing the nature of our humanity, and the actors do their best. I'm not you know, it's not a badly presented film, but the story feels after a while like the sort of thing you've seen before.
Yeah.
And the arc of the story is pretty predictable. And there was a very cliched final shot, which draws to mind the sort of scenes you've seen in films like Batman, Spider-Man, Daredevil, I shouldn't give it too much away, but the idea of the lone hero overlooking the cityscape. It was a bit of a cliche. So it looks good. It looks good. There is a lot of good action if you're into that, but not memorable, sadly. So I wouldn't be telling you to rush out and buy a ticket, although with your experience in Japan, you might be tempted just out of curiosity's sake, perhaps, Steve.
Well, I have a certain lingering affection for...
Yeah.
It's hard to know what to call him these days. For a while, he was going just by the mononym of Takeshi.
All right.
And I remember back when he did Johnny Mnemonic back in, I think it was mid-90s.
Right.
When he was playing opposite, what's his name? Keanu Reeves.
Oh, okay, right.
His English is never, you know, he's Japanese, basically doesn't speak English. And his delivery in that was absolutely appalling. But that was part of the character he was playing. But I remember... Takeshi from my Japanese days, as he was Beat Takeshi. That was his stage name, was Bito Takeshi, because he and Bito Kiyoshi were part of a two man comedy team called Two Beat.
Okay.
And so there was two Bito. There was Bito Takeshi and Bito Kiyoshi. The other one was Kaneko Kiyoshi was the guy's name, and it was very, very typical Japanese slapstick comedy.
That's interesting, because he plays a pretty, he's one of the most serious characters in this film. He plays a very,
I know,
he's the boss of this crime fighting unit, so that's interesting.
When you see him on Japanese telly, it's all the worst cliches of inane Japanese light entertainment. You know, there's nothing funnier than hitting somebody over the head. Seriously, there's no subtlety, no sophistication in it whatsoever, and yet outside Japan he's seen as some sort of auteur and borderline genius, and it's, people don't even realise. If you notice, his face looks like he might have had Bell's palsy or something.
Mm-hmm.
The left side of his face is strangely immobile.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is that in the mid-90s he got himself drunk, and this is the version of the story that's all filtered out, that I'm possibly getting details wrong here, so we've got to be skirting around the defamation suits, but my understanding is that after one can sake too many, and he was riding a motor scooter through, I think it was Ueno Park in Tokyo, and he fell off and hit his head against a curb, and the neurological damage he did has left his one half of his face immobile.
Okay.
He's a much more complex individual than he's often reported to be outside of Japan. He's a fascinating bloke.
Yeah. Well, actually, his character is one of the ones you're likely to remember from the film, partly because he's the only one speaking Japanese, I guess.
Right.
But he does play it quite well, I have to say. So, Yeah, it's just in the it sits in the middle of a lot of other sort of sci-fi action type films that we see these days. I wouldn't give it a terrible mark, but I'm not going to give it a very high one either, sadly.
Fair enough. So if you've got a particular interest in this kind of film, then it's one for the completists, yeah?
Yeah, that would be fair. I mean, and there would be a few completists out there, I think, just who would be familiar with the original material, I guess. So yeah. So look, and as you said, Steve, to come back to our where we started with Japan and tsunamis, there has been this big rush of films, but there is of course still quite a few coming up not that far away. Some quite big other big blockbuster type films that are I'm sure the makers are hoping will make a packet at the box office.
Indeed. Well, there's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. The
Yep, that's
original
it.
was very, very well received, so I have a feeling that one's going to go down a storm. Obviously, it was well enough received that they've made a second.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, where do you stand on the Fast and the Furious?
Well, actually, I have never seen one at the cinema. That's where I stand.
Okay. Well, hang on. I like the way you worded that. You've never seen one at the cinema, so that means you have an extensive collection. You've got the video box set at
No,
home.
no, no. Actually, I don't. I may have seen bits of here and there on TV. Yeah, I mean, I know that they're extremely popular. I think the last one was hugely popular. I think it made $1 billion or something. But the last one was the one where one of the actors died, didn't he, on
Yes.
set, and that may have contributed to that. So I've seen the trailer for this one. It does look like a heck of an action movie with all sorts of stunts and explosions and fast
Yes.
cars and incredible action. So if you are into that, boy, you'll be rushing to see this one, I'm sure.
Yes, that's the fate of the Furious.
The Fate of the Furious. And there's yet another one of these animated films we've been talking, not a Lego movie, but another sort of one that I suspect is for kids and adults as well. I think it's called Boss Baby,
Yes.
Steve.
Which
And yes,
what do you what do we think? What do we think?
what intrigues me is I saw a little reference in a news story, I think it was even today, that the makers are already gone public to decry any suggestion that the character of the Boss Baby is in any way trying to be a parody of the 45th President of the United States.
Ah.
Apparently, there's a bit of a physical resemblance about the hairstyle. I'm not sure, so
I would
that
I
alone might be a reason to see it, actually.
Well, I'm going to suggest that intellectually, it's probably streets ahead of the 45th President of the United
Oh,
States.
well, that might well be true. Yes, yes, yes.
Now,
So, but...
that you have played, dare I say it, your trump card.
Oh,
I know, effortless, effortless. Now,
yes.
now that we've gone down that path, what's the
Yes.
connection
Oh
between
God, yes.
Donald Trump and the Lego Batman movie?
Now I did not know the answer to this. You mentioned it earlier, and I was floored. That's Ored.
Yes, you have
Please,
no flaws,
please.
Simon. You are a
That's
consummate reviewer.
right. Please pick up this and this thread, and string it together for us, because I didn't know the answer to this at
Well,
all.
what one thing that the so-called president decided he was going to do was hire people who have never been involved in politics before to cabinet positions,
Yeah,
and sorry.
cunning plan, I was going to say.
Oh, right, yeah, sorry. So, in keeping with that little thread, now I need to
Yes.
make sure I'm getting the title ex his actual new title absolutely correct. So, as we speak, I'm heading to Wikipedia on my computer because I want to make sure that we get this right. So, where are we?
As we should.
Yeah, he has there is Secretary of the Treasury. Who has been confirmed, and he's in now, is a gentleman by the name of Stephen Mnuchin, or Mnuchin, I'm not totally sure how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the reason you'd make him Secretary of the Treasury is because he's got absolutely no experience in that kind of thing at all. Instead, he has been a film producer. And his first film production credit was the Lego Movie.
Goodness.
And now he's also produced American Sniper. I'm looking at Mad Max Fury Road, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. That was another one.
Oh, okay.
What else? I mean, there's loads here. I'm just picking them out at random here. Batman vs Superman, Dawn of Justice. There's nothing to be proud of, to be fair. The Conjuring 2, The Legend of Tarzan, Suicide Squad. Oh dear. But also Sully, Miracle on the Hudson.
Okay.
The
Yeah. Well, there you
Accountant, Collateral Beauty. Now, all our oh, Fist Fight. Oh dear God! All of these films, he's got an executive producer credit on, and also the Lego Batman movie.
It's all interwoven so tightly.
Wheels within wheels.
God. Yeah.
You're losing the will to live here, Simon.
I am. It's too much for me. Oh God. Yes. Well, look. Probably it's a good thing that I didn't know that before I went to see the Lego Batman movie, because it might have coloured my view, I suspect.
I knew that he had been involved in films, and I noticed as the credits were rolling that his name came up as an executive producer. Now, to be fair, I don't know what he actually does, because his first executive producer credit was 2014. That was the Lego movie, and he's got 38 producer credits.
Oh, he's been busy then. Jeez.
Yeah,
wonder what exactly he does, though, as you say. Yes.
Yes, I don't quite know how he finds the time to manage the treasury department as well.
Whew. Well, you know, you make do. Thank you for that, sharing that piece of information.
It's what we do.
It's what we do. And that's what we've just done. You've been listening to Crave. And Steve and I will be back pretty soon with some more music, some more film, but we'd like to hear from you. We know you've been visiting our website and our Facebook page and following us on Twitter. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch, you can email us at podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can join all the wonderful people who've already found us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Crave Podcast.
Yes, you can. So I am Simon Mercer.
And I am indeed Steve McCabe.
Indeed he is, and that's what's been entertaining us this week.
Oh yes, indeed.